Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, Sports City. It's your boy TP Thomas back at the helm. The Crossover Cafe is wide open. Let me tell you something. It's April 7th, as you know, the date 2016. We got about a week left of NBA basketball. People fighting for position, seeing how they're going to make it through 1 through 8. People at the bottom of each conference to see who's going to respectively get the number one pick. Don't know who's going to be there, if it's going to be Simmons, Ingram, Hield, probably an international player, somebody we're missing. But we got all of that to discuss and more. We got people with an epic matchup atop the Western Conference, or better yet, atop the NBA, because these two teams have the best record in the NBA. So we got a lot to discuss, man. 60 or more minutes locked and loaded here in the cafe. I done took off this blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside the kitchen. Timeless is
New York, Jersey, Philly, Baltimore, D.C., Virginia, Atlanta, everybody rock!
Number is 917-889-9592. You got the next 60 minutes locked and loaded with Sports City. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but y'all are here with the chefs. And I already got a note from a couple of the guys around the kitchen that they'll be in here as soon as possible. They got an engagement or two before the show. So I'm going to be in here by myself. But before I get into anything, happy April to everybody out there. This is the last week and a half of regular season basketball. So, it gets pretty thick here in the kitchen, especially during the cafe with everything going on. So until I get here, I'm going to jump into a couple of issues or topics that are going on around the NBA. First and foremost, the topic that I have for the brothers out of the gate, but I have to get to them before they get here. I had it noted as the April run. The April run that I have is Eastern Conference 7 through 10, which include the Pacers, the Pistons, the Bulls at 9, the Wizards at 10, and then in the Western Conference, the Mavericks at 7, fought their way back. I think they were listening to what was going on in the kitchen, that's for sure. The Jazz at 8, people, and the Rockets in 9th place. Now, I really don't even want to include the 10th place situation in the Western Conference because I think they are too far out to make their way back in, which is the Denver Nuggets. They're 6.5, or better yet, let me say it right. They're 7.5 out of the 8th spot. So I think it's clearly known that they can't make it. However, the Rockets can make a push at this. They're a game out. Utah is clinging to that 8th seed, which makes a very interesting matchup if they do hang on to the 8th seed up against the Golden State Warriors. Now, I know a lot of people are already saying, well, nobody's going to slow down the Warriors until they probably get into the second round or the Western Conference Finals, which may remain true. But Utah has actually been playing them tough all season long. For some odd reason, Snyder and the Jazz played the Warriors well. So it'd be interesting if they could hang on to the eighth seed. However, Houston wouldn't be a bad scenario if they got into the eighth seed. However, Houston doesn't look too good. They're under 500 as of now, and they already have issues approaching the end of the season. So this is why I have my question around it. Do we really want to see Houston in the postseason? Which it makes me feel bad because I love and respect a guy like James Harden, respect a guy like Dwight Howard. I respect a lot of people on their roster. But there's so much confusion, and if J.B. Bickerstaff is the guy, to run a team into the postseason after, let's be honest, this was just a matchup last year in the Western Conference Finals with the Houston Rockets going up against the Golden State Warriors. And the Golden State Warriors took care of business so bad that a lot of people, including myself, it's an afterthought on how these guys met up in that conference final. Now, this is the scenario. Houston is two games behind Dallas. They're a game behind Utah, in which four games remaining. You have Utah that has four games remaining, and also Dallas has. So everybody has four games remaining, in which it's a two-game at best scenario difference between Houston and Dallas at the seventh seed. Now, Dallas has been turning it on as of late. They're on a five-game winning streak, playing good basketball out of the gate, or out of their last couple of games, not out of the gate. But this is the one thing I'm looking at. If who's going to remain consistent going into the postseason, and this is when you want to see teams play their best breed of basketball right now, playing hot basketball going into the postseason, because you don't know who's going to slow up or who comes out and play strong basketball and puts pressure on these top-heavy teams like the Warriors, like the Spurs, like the Thunder, like the Clippers being 1-4 in the Western Conference. So I don't know, because you get it from all angles with Utah. They have interesting guard play. They have a guy like Hayward at the swing spot, have Biggs and Gobert and Favors as well. I like what they're putting out. And Dallas, they have shooters like Wes Matthews and company, but this is the one thing I'm looking at. Is this team finally stringing it together for Dirk? I mean, it's always been a situation where we looked at Dirk Nowitzki carrying the Mavericks, which Dirk is not going to stop being the ammunition. Of course, you have to guard 41, make sure that he doesn't get a shot up that he's comfortable with. But they have been having the role players step up, like Barea, like Powell. I love that last name. Coming up and playing good ball down the stretch for the Mavericks. So if they can hang on to the seventh seed, it would be interesting. I don't know if they would rattle the Spurs cage, but if they could stay at the seventh seed, it would set up for an interesting 2-7 matchup where Dallas would play the Spurs. They basically both would be at home in the state of Texas. It's not like they would have to travel far. I think that's a great scenario. But the 1-8 situation, I'm going to be honest. I think the Warriors get out of there flying colors. But I'd rather see a Utah Jazz team go up against this Golden State Warrior team because, let's be honest, Houston is not playing together basketball. I know they have a lot of big-name characters on the roster, so on and so forth, but the way that they got rid of Mikhail again in the season, having Bickerstaff come here and having to deal with the issues that they have off the floor that ends up translating on the floor with their superstars in Dwight Howard, James Harden. They just brought Beasley in the door. Beasley's actually been playing decent basketball as well. They have been putting it together somewhat. It's just not working out. Their last 10 games, they've gone 6-4. 4-6. I have it backwards. They went 4-6, in which they lost the game the other night up against the Dallas Mavericks as well, right there in the state of Texas also. So these are the questions that do remain for this Houston Rockets team on the outside looking in. I do have somebody in queue that is having a special day, Sports City. So, I can't find the button in queue, but I'm going to let him in. Mr. Silva, the birthday boy, and interesting, this is a landmark birthday, Sports City. It's his 30th, so he has given us some time in the kitchen, Sports City. So, happy birthday, Mr. Silva. Welcome to the cafe. How are you feeling this evening?
I'm feeling good. It is a special day. Also, happy birthday to Rondé Barber and newly acquired Green Bay Packer tight end Jared Cook. Also have a birthday today. So just a couple notable athletes. I'm pretty sure there's more. But, yeah, it's a great day going. Thank you so much. I'll get right into it real quick and just hopping right in. To me, I won't spend too much time on the West because ultimately it is much ado about nothing. Now, again, you talk about that Dallas Spurs matchup that could possibly be, headlining the first round. I think to me that ultimately favors the Spurs, a team that needs the rest, that doesn't really, that could really benefit not having to travel very far, not having to take an extra day to get on a plane and go somewhere. They're pretty much leaving day of a few hours before the game to go wherever they're going for their away games in Dallas. So I think, you know, as much as it helps both teams, I think it very much favors the Spurs in that situation. I mean, you know, again, the mentality of the Spurs, it is what it is. I'm sure if they had to play in Costa Rica, it would be the same thing. But, you know, I really do think that the Spurs could, you know, will make handiwork of whoever they have in the first round. I think 1-3 take care of whoever they need to in the West in the first round. And I don't mean to boast or say that those three are just head and shoulders above, you know, which would be 6, 7, and 8. I just think that they are better teams. They are well equipped for the playoffs, and I do think that whether or not they're good series 6 or 7 or 5 or 4, you know, I think they are going to be won by the higher seeds, the 1, 2, and 3. The Eastern Conference, however, I believe that's the one where it gets to me, where we're really looking at something that we can see a team swing in there, like Washington, like Chicago, maybe Detroit sneaks up in there, gets to 7. But, you know, to me, I think that's a bigger will be question mark or bigger outplay onto the playoffs in the scheme of things going forward. I think the first round in the Eastern Conference, we will see an upset or two. Who it will be, obviously, I'm not going to say that right now. We don't know who they're playing. But to me, I think that's I think that's bigger of a chance in that first round. For, you know, even a Washington to sneak up in the 8 and win a 4-3 series, 7 games against Cleveland. I don't think that would shock most people, you know, at all. I think it would be a good series, and we've all been talking about Washington and the talent that they have, you know, and if they get the coaching at the right time and they just put everything together, like you said, and it clicks, I think it's more likely that a 6-7 or an 8 seed in the Eastern Conference wins more than one game or more than two games in the first round. I really do. In the Western Conference, I think we'll actually be lucky to see a first-round lower seed get two wins. I understand that, you know, Utah has played the Warriors tough all year, and they've been tough drag-out games. I think a few of them under 100 points, but I believe the Warriors still won all of those. So I do accept and I do believe that Utah can give them a challenge, push them in some games. But to me, I think it just sharpens the sword for the Warriors in that core group. I mean, it's pretty much still sharpening still at that point. A team that really gives you hiccups all year long, you get them first round, you get to sharpen your tools for the game and for the games plural. And then you look at the subsequent series you have, and you know, if you dominate them, possibly 4-0, 4-1, you take that moving forward, and you feel good about yourself. Now, we all know the mentality of certain players of certain teams. You can go in and you can underestimate your opponent. You can go in and blow past an opponent and get big headed. Think you don't have to play. Think you can play any style. And we know in these playoffs, anything can happen. I just feel if anything can happen, that catchphrase, you know, it's the playoffs, you know, any given day. I believe that's more in the second round for the Western Conference than it is the first. I think everything plays out as it's supposed to. The Eastern Conference, I think, raises eyebrows. We get some wows, and we definitely get some upset.
Now, here goes the scenario that I'm going to paint the picture for you. The Pacers have played 78 games, which they're at 42-36, which they have not clinched yet. The Pistons have played 79 games at 42-37, which they have not clinched yet. The Bulls are on the outside looking in, 39-39, in which they have a game up against Miami in Miami tonight. The Wizards are 38-40, 78 games played, 4 games left. Let me do the scenario for the Wizards. Virtually, they have to win out. They have to win their remaining 4 games and hope, for the Pacers' sake, they have to hope the Pacers lose out. The Pacers have to lose all 4 games. The Pistons have to at least lose 3. Well, actually, the remaining 3. So the Wizards cannot watch any of these guys win. If the Pacers or Pistons win one game, the Wizards are completely eliminated. The Bulls, in which are in front of a tough matchup in front of the Miami Heat, right? Miami Heat are ranked fifth in the Eastern Conference, which if they win, they're tied for fourth. So this game, or let me say this correctly, if they win, they're tied for third and fourth place because it goes back to how critical everybody's fighting for home court advantage, so on and so forth. Where the Hawks are in third place now, the Celtics are in fourth, and the Heat are sitting there at fifth, where everybody is jostling for position in the Eastern Conference, where I don't know if the Wizards can get back into the thick of things, especially with the Pistons. If they win a game, they rule them out from the eighth seed just to hold them off. The Bulls, however, if the Pistons lose two games and the Bulls win tonight and win again, then we're looking at a tooth-and-nail situation for that last game. I think the Bulls would have to watch the Pistons have to lose that last and final game because that's the half-game edge that the Pistons have over the Bulls right now because they're 2.5 ahead of them. It's a tough scenario in the Eastern Conference where I hate to say it like this, Sports City, I really do. I think this is the last that we see of this Chicago Bulls team as it is constructed. And I'm talking about top to bottom. And one, you know, a notable chef that's been here for years, Mark Mosley, Chicago guy, lives out there in Chicago, alongside with a guy like Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose being born, raised, and still lives in Chicago, I think Derrick Rose is gone. I hate to say it like this. I would love for him to stay home. A lot of people in that city uproar about Derrick Rose, so on and so forth, on a night-by-night basis. But he's clearly been injury-prone since the 2010-2011 season, once he got injured in that series up against the Philadelphia 76ers. And hasn't really been himself. He's been trying to fight his way to get back and then ends up on a decline somehow. Fights his way to get back, ends up on a decline somehow. Then you get a guy like Joakim Noah, their defensive anchor, separates his shoulder, out for the season. Jimmy Butler missed time. You had a situation where Dunleavy's missed time as well. And you have an offensive coach and Fred Hoiberg that is not preaching defense. And listen to this. This is a Chicago Bulls team that is watching people play up against them and score 103 points a night. People are averaging 103 points on the Chicago Bulls team, but Tom Thibodeau did not allow this. This still infuriates me that they got rid of Tom Thibodeau. That Tom Thibodeau was out there on the market as a head coach where he had this team win the Eastern Conference at one point or sit up there, you know, top battling with the Miami Heat or battling with the, you know, Cleveland Cavalier team. They are on the outside looking in, and it could get worse. This is the one thing that I look at with the Eastern Conference. Now, anything that you like to add before I go to the Western Conference situation, Nacho?
No, you hit it right on the head. I think it is a you know, long shot for the Wizards to make it. I think the Bulls process is a process that we all anticipated. We were, you know, trigger happy or too quick to pull the trigger on that situation, thinking it would come a lot quicker like this year instead of next year. But you're right. I think the situation where this is blown up from the get-go. Again, you got a Tom Thibodeau, like we were discussing, was missing the star player, the albeit heir apparent to Chicago's, you know, whatever it is. He was supposed to be the man. The talent was there. The MVP season was there. He gets hurt. He goes down. He misses pretty much 3 years, and they still make the playoffs. So pretty much hit on the head. And Thibodeau leaving and Thibodeau having those problems, you know, that was indicative of the team that he was given. And he was able to put it out there defensively, win games with very little offense that he could speak of, even though they took Carlos Boozer away that last year and they took pieces away from him. And pieces were hurt. Let's not forget the team wasn't a picture perfect, health picture for I forget the goals. But, you know, they weren't that. You know, Joakim Noah was down, Boozer was down, Butler was down. You name it, everyone was down for a period of time, and he was still winning games, being, I believe, no lower than fifth or sixth on that playoff seed list, going to the playoffs, winning first rounds, winning second rounds with very inefficient teams. So, yeah, we talk about Tom Thibodeau in a highlight because of what he did for that team and what he possibly could do for another team now. What they did to him in Chicago, it was a train wreck of a situation. So moving on from that, though, yeah, they pretty much on the other teams, it is going to be Pistons win one and knock out Washington, you know, things of that nature. But yeah, I think it's pretty much everything you said there for those other teams that should fall into line. Washington is definitely a shot in the dark, pretty much.
Okay, and just like you said for the Washington Wizards, they have to, they need the Pacers and or the Pistons to lose everything. More than likely, I say the Pistons, because the Pistons have three games. I think it's more likely for the Pistons to lose three in a row than the Pacers to lose four. Now, look in Chicago probably be safe seeing that happen too. Now, looking at the Western Conference situation, this is like the nail biter. This is the nail biter because there are two games that separate from the Rockets at ninth to the Mavericks at seventh. So anything can happen. The Rockets can get back into this situation if any of these two teams ahead of them, being Dallas or Utah, end up slipping up. Now, I'm not going to lie. Houston has made their own bed in this situation. They did not play good out of the gate. They had situations on and off the court. They lost their head coach, who basically put these pieces into play, being Kevin McHale. Oh, let me get it correct. The Hall of Famer is Kevin McHale, which, you know, Kevin McHale was more or less, I think, James Harden heavy. Now this team is looking at a team trying to, you know, fit the pieces of the role players that they do have there. And them being under 500, they'd have to make an interesting run to get back into this and watch Utah or Dallas lose out or lose a game or two so they can get back into this. This is a very interesting scenario, which, like I said, I don't want to see the Rockets get into the playoffs and play Golden State and potentially get swept. That's what I'm worried about. This is the one thing, and I can't wait to start talking about the Warriors and their situation as we're climbing closer to the end of the regular season in the NBA. But I'd rather see a Utah team that's given them fits. Even though Utah isn't heavily successful up against this Golden State Warrior team, they have given them fits. Dallas playing up against San Antonio, it depends on who is guarding Dirk. If it is LaMarcus Aldridge, because LaMarcus Aldridge in the playoffs has not played well up against Dirk Nowitzki. So Dirk could actually end up taking advantage against that. Tim Duncan and Dirk, I mean, these guys go back and forth ever since the days when Tim was playing the four. They might put Tim at the five and let LaMarcus float around. But it'd be an interesting scenario if this does end up panning out with Texas against Texas in the same state. They don't have to travel much. In which I know Carlisle and Pop, these two have seen each other more than enough in regular season and in postseason. It was set up for a very interesting matchup, especially with the matchup that the Spurs are faced with today. I'm trying my best not to talk about that game or the two teams that are meeting up tonight at 10:30 this evening, Eastern Standard. But I must say, if the Rockets end up missing the playoffs, we already know that Dwight Howard is saying that he's leaving. Dwight Howard is leaving. So where do the Rockets go after this, losing their real big man? I mean, at the end of the day, you know, they're saying that the center position is fading out of the NBA. It's looking like it's more or less guard and forward heavy. But you don't just, you know, displace and replace a guy like Dwight Howard, you know. And watching him, you get a 20-10 caliber guy disappear. Where do the Rockets go from there? Knowing that they're going to get another head coach, because I don't think J.B. Bickerstaff is the head coach next season for this team, as much as he's done of a job with the team. I'm not going to say he did a bad job. He had to pick up the pieces outside of this team losing an influential head coach and Kevin McHale. But your thoughts, Nacho, on the Rockets trying to get back in this thing. If not, like we mentioned, if Utah can give the Warriors a fit, I'm not going to lie, I really think the Warriors will roll on them. But also Dallas going up against the San Antonio Spurs, I mean, that could be anybody's series too, because Dallas is finally playing strong basketball as of late, even though there is a 25-26 game difference record-wise between Dallas and San Antonio. I think once the postseason starts, the records disappear. Everybody's 0-0. But your thoughts on these two teams being prepared for the postseason is one gets hot and one has not lost at home or at all this season.
You know, quickly on the Houston situation, I think that's, you know, that's new. I mean, even if they do get into that eighth spot, that's a sweep, and that's a very serious sweep. And no disrespect to the Rockets, but they're not even in that Warriors class. So that right there in and of itself is something that I see being a series that will very much be unwatchable for anyone who isn't a Warriors fan. Moving on from that, the Utah series, I think, again, you're right. They'll handle their business. They'll do what they got to do. It'll be lower scoring. It'll be gritty. It'll be just like the regular season, a little bit tougher, probably a little bit nail-biting. And, you know, it's crazy. You don't really feel like you can, you know, in other postseasons, you can guess maybe someone hits a game winner, maybe this. And if that Utah series does come to fruition, I think it will be Steph Curry. He will have to hit one or two game winners, and he'll hit it. Win the game for them and carry on. The thing about Dallas and the San Antonio Spurs is, like you said, again, that to me, Dallas has been so up and down. They've had some runs where they've played like a top inch a lot, top tiers, you know, contending team, and then of course they've played down to the nitty gritty. I think this is the year where teams like Dallas. Really do have a chance to make some noise. Maybe they can. To me, I think that the Spurs can handle them if they get knocked down. I believe they're in the 7. If they get knocked down to the 8, however the ending of it shapes out, and they've got to face the San Antonio Spurs or the Golden State Warriors, whoever they're going up against, I think they're going to handle them. the thing is, it may be a better series with the Spurs. Albeit the fact that they are going to be closer to home. They won't have to travel as far to play away at San Antonio. They might be a little bit more winded, well-rested, and make for a better series than possibly Golden State. But I think definitely it's going to be, you know, the Warriors and the Spurs are going to run over who they got in the first round. You know, and then even possibly down even the number 3, the Thunder, I think they're definitely going to be able to, you know, crank out first round wins and move on to the second round and worry about it. To me, the West team race and two of them obviously will have to play each other and figure it out once the playoff seeds get in there. But to me, it is a 3-team race with Oklahoma City Thunder, the San Antonio Spurs, and the Golden State Warriors. The Clippers, to me, never ever with Chris Paul at the helm and Doc Rivers as head coach, will they be NBA Finals, you know, championship contenders? To me, I just don't think they have the heart, the grit to win out a 7-game series in the Western Conference or even in the Finals. So they're out of it. Winning in the first round, a possibility, obviously. But to me, I think they're a second thought. They're an afterthought. Surviving last type of situation where it's everything against everything, and that's exactly. Everything falls their way. That's the only way I think they get on and keep winning.
Okay. Now, before I get away from the I am getting away from the, you know, the bottom of the barrel playoff brackets, both Eastern and Western Conference, I can no longer sit on this any longer. I can't. The Golden State Warriors. Now, the way that I have this written up is the Warriors seed. And I mean the letter C in apostrophe S. And the C that I have is this coach or concerns, in which they did not lose all season at home. They have been coasting as best as they possibly can, playing the best breed of basketball that we have seen since 95-96, since the Chicago Bulls and Michael Jordan put together this team that won the championship in that year also, in which their last two home games, the Golden State Warriors, have lost. They've lost their last two games, in which the Celtics went into the Oracle and won a game, followed by a Minnesota Timberwolves team, young, trying to prove themselves, 26 games under 500, people. Now, let me repeat this. 26 games under 500 went into the Oracle. And not only were down 17 in this game, stormed back, pushed it to an overtime, and won this game up against the Golden State Warriors. Now, I know they're 69-9. If they went out, they could win 73-9 and eclipse the Bulls season of 95-96, in which their last four games, Spurs-Memphis, Spurs Memphis. Interesting that they play, you know, the Spurs team right behind them in the Western Conference, who could make this, you know, tough for them. If Pop plans to play his starting lineup in both games, right? Look, this is crazy. And also, the Memphis Grizzlies, where you don't know what you're going to get because they don't have Marc Gasol to play the five position up against a guy like Andrew Bogut. But you get Zach Randolph, a guy that grinds. You got Tony Allen that plays defense. Depending on what this Grizzly team is going to look like, you never know what you're going to get. It's like a box of chocolates, you know, similar to the Forrest Gump situation. But both of these teams can beat the Golden State Warriors, which I think the Warriors look at this situation as the true test if they want the championship or not. That, of course, everything doesn't lay on the line for them to win 73 or 72 games to tie it, but this is still a remarkable season. Hell, if the Warriors lost out, even though I know this would be a damper to their situation, if the Warriors lost their last four games, right? That's how it would be, yeah, their last four games. They'd be 69-13. That's not even a bad – that's nowhere near a bad season. Like, they could rest. They could rest Steph and all of them. But, I mean, is this the way that they look at this? Is this causing for concern? Nacho, I want to know how you feel about this. With their last two home games, going up against the Celtics, going up against the Wolves, they have let go interesting games up against interesting teams. One team is a quality playoff contender in the Eastern Conference in the Boston Celtics, and you have one, a Minnesota Timberwolves team that doesn't even have a sturdy or stable coach. Because let me be honest, I don't think Sam Mitchell will be coaching that team 2 or 3 years from now. I think they'll probably let him continue into next season, which I doubt, but I think they probably will. And they get rid of him and bring another coach in there immediately because they have a bunch of young talent and young guns to get this done. Now, they're going up against San Antonio, in which they beat San Antonio by 30 the last time San Antonio was in Oakland. Your thoughts on this? Don't even go into the game tonight. Don't go into the game tonight. I want to talk about the last couple of games with the Warriors. Are they coasting? Are they resting and seeing what teams throw at them? Or is this cause for concern?
I think this is play to win. To me, I think the Warriors, from day one, and the way that they've been given answers, the way that they've been handling the situation, is play to win. We get 73, we get 73. We get 69, we get 69. We are number one in the Western Conference. We feel, and this is a Warriors mind mentality right now, we feel no one in the Western Conference can see us. We play to the best of our abilities, and we'll win 8 times out of 10. 9 times out of 10. That's the mentality they've been going on this year, and I think that's the mentality they're carrying for the end of the season to the end of to the playoffs. Would you be ecstatic? Do you want to win? Obviously, that's what I think they're doing. I think they're playing to win. If they win, great. If they lose, I don't think they're going to harp on it. I don't think they're going to dwell on it. I don't think it affects them going into the playoffs. I 100% believe that when they lose, they look at the film, they look at the study, they study the basketball game, and they get better. I think this is a team that just constantly strives to be better every single game out, and it shows. I've been thoroughly impressed with this team and the way they've been playing this basketball season against these NBA teams. You know, not comparing to anyone else in any other year, but in a vacuum, this 2015 to 2016 season, the Golden State Warriors have been putting out tremendous basketball game in and game out. Have they lost a few? Yeah, they lost to the Minnesota Timberwolves. They lost to the L.A. Lakers. But they also beat the San Antonio Spurs, who are only a couple games behind them by 30 points at home. So this is a team, to me, that realistically is playing for the finals. They're playing a repeat, and they're playing to do what they got to do. The San Antonio Spurs, like you said, they plan to play their allotted talent. They plan to keep everyone going. They don't plan to rest anyone, as Pop has already said. But we know Pop does whatever Pop wants to do. I think he sees something happening. He sees a trend early. It could be a 5-point deficit, a 6-point deficit. Pop does whatever he wants, especially in the regular season. So I would not be surprised to see maybe the starting five only play for 5 minutes. He feels it's not right, and he pulls them. That's just something we all know Pop could do, would do, will do, when do, whatever. That's just what he does. So, to me, I think the San Antonio Spurs are another team that are playing for the playoffs. They're doing what they need to do, and they do what they do every year. It's in Memphis that I feel can be the wrench in wrench in the socket, so to speak, the hiccup in the plan. I think if Memphis plays their cards right, falls back into that sixth spot, and then essentially you're playing the L.A. Clippers the first round. The Oklahoma City Thunder the first round. You get an opportunity there against another team that you're very familiar with, that you have beaten in the playoffs, albeit different squad, different rosters, not entirely, but different rosters. You have beat them, familiarity, so to speak. I think that's a series that they would want to pull first round. I think to me that is the biggest question when it comes to this first round. Where does Memphis fall? Do they fall back into that sixth spot and then have to take on an Oklahoma City, a team that they're very familiar with, even though we've got, like you already know, Russell Westbrook playing lights out, playing probably some of the best basketball we've seen this year as well. So MVP caliber. So to me, it's just, to me, in the Western Conference, the biggest hiccup or the biggest chance of someone in that top three having a slip would be Memphis falling to six. I don't know if they can take another loss or two and fall to seven. I don't think that's possible. But falling back to six, I think they're only one game up on the sixth seed, and it's a whole different story for whoever's got them in the first round. And again, this is a team in Memphis that, for whatever reason, year in and year out, loves playing as the underdog. Loves playing that nitty-gritty basketball, and that's what it comes down to me in the Western Conference. The second round is going to be a lot more interesting. I think the first round plays out the way it should.
Now, it's interesting that you throw the Memphis Grizzlies ordeal or situation with them going into the postseason, because this is a Memphis Grizzlies team just about 4 or 5 years back. I really want to say six. I think it was the 2011 season, where they were an 8 seed and beat the San Antonio Spurs out the gate. So these are things that people need to consider, that this Grizzly team can get it done. But this is a Grizzly team without Mark Gasol. That is the one thing that I think that remains big for this Grizzly team. They have been playing inspired basketball, winning games that a lot of people think that they should be letting go or losing. But can they do it without their defensive anchor? Notably, 2 or 3 years this place, Defensive Player of the Year, and Mark Gasol. I'm going to be honest. I know Z-Bo has more room to operate, but he does probably look more to having a big guy down there other than the Birdman that, they just acquired from the Heat a few months ago. That's a tough thing for the Grizzlies, for them to actually hang on to, where in which they are, basically a game play in front of Portland. So if they lose their next game, Portland moves up. If they win their next game, they remain at five. So that's a whole other scenario. But I do want to look at this situation with Golden State losing their last two games at home. The Celtics, a team that basically was the closest to beating them out of the gate. And I don't know how you guys set this up, even though Golden State ended up showing true to what was to form. How you guys set out the gate, I think it was 23 or 25 of their first straight games they won. They started out of the gate ripping and running, playing the best basketball we've seen. And then Golden State goes into the Garden in Boston, and the Celtics give them all that they can handle, winning that game up against the Celtics by five. And then the next game, they ended up losing their first game of the season. Now, the Celtics probably replayed that in their minds and continue to stress the fact that they can actually play against this Golden State Warriors team no matter where they're playing, who's on their roster, who's in the game at the given time, whether it's Steph, Clay, Draymond, Iguodala, Harrison Barnes, and which I will be discussing about the incredible situation that this team does have. But to survive the moxie, you know what I'm saying? And then you got another scenario in which, right, they play a Wolves team. And the Wolves, I'm not going to lie, because I just seen it happen on my own team's home floor. They went into Chesapeake Arena down in Oklahoma City and beat the Thunder on their home floor. So they have a lot of shock value up their sleeve. For them to go into Golden State, and in which this is a Golden State Warriors team that doesn't look like they've been losing often. Look, they only have 9 losses on the season. Starting the season at the end of October, until the beginning of April, they've only let go 9 games. You could pick them up or they lost 3. Pick one. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's incredible. That's incredible that they're threatening Michael Jordan and the Bulls' record, you know? And they lose a game to a team that, like I said, 26 games under 500. A coach is Sam Mitchell, which I wouldn't say he's a world beater as a coach. I mean, he knows basketball. He's a former NBA player. But I don't think he could go in there and out-coach Steve Kerr at this given time. But Steve Kerr coming off of a championship year, winning 5 championships as a player, winning his 6th as a coach. I mean, his 6th ring as a coach. You know what I'm saying? So it's tough to see this Golden State Warrior team go to the finish line, and then you have a mention or a comment by Draymond saying they're bored with the regular season. Is that a situation that you really want people to hear, that you guys have another level to turn it up to, or this is the basketball that they're going to get when you guys really want to take everything serious? Because you only have one championship. And not to say that it isn't important. It is important to get a championship done or put under the wing so you guys can actually, you know, breathe a little bit or attack a lot of these teams that you guys go up against. This is incredible that Draymond come out with a statement like that. I think it's best that they keep it under the radar, continue to attack teams, whether it's Eastern or Western Conference, because a lot of these teams are intimidated by playing the Golden State Warriors. Let's be honest. They are at an 89% winning clip. 89% of the games that they play, they win. I mean, the sure bet is the Golden State Warriors, even in the matchup tonight, which I will be getting to in just a little bit. But for teams that are of a lesser potency of the San Antonio Spurs, of an Oklahoma City Thunder, or a Cleveland Cavaliers team, a Toronto Raptors team, Boston was able to do it. The Wolves are able to do it. Now this is a situation where the Spurs have to try and come in that building and get it done. So I've been trying to sit on this as long as I can with this this matchup up today, the Warriors and the Spurs, which takes place 2 hours from now, less than 2 hours from now. Let me say it like that. 108 minutes. We've got 108 minutes until that game starts off. I want to figure out how this game goes down. Now, Pop says, in their last two matches where they played them tonight, Thursday night, and they also play the Warriors Sunday in San Antonio. Now, this is incredible because the last time the Warriors beat the Spurs in San Antonio, which I think it can happen because this can't go on any longer. I don't think this will go on any longer. Time the Warriors beat the Spurs in San Antonio, February 14th, 1997, people, in which Tim Duncan was still in college. Tim Duncan has not lost to Golden State ever in San Antonio. So I think this could drive Golden State even more if they want to push themselves to a championship repeat. And two, I think this is Popovich's first season as the head coach there. The guys like Steph Curry was, 9 years old? Like, these guys were in elementary school while this was going on. I think that has to be a driving force. But in which the game tonight, where the Spurs are going up against Golden State, right? Let's just look at this. The Spurs are in Golden State. Last time they played in the Oracle, they lost by 30 with their players there. I don't know what type of situation Pop draws up. I know Steve Kerr knows a ton about Greg Popovich, playing for Greg Popovich, getting the championship under the Spurs tutelage with Greg Popovich as well in the early 2000s with David Robinson, Tim Duncan, so on and so forth. So he knows the system. He knows what he's facing with Greg Popovich. Does Pop come with a different scheme, something that Golden State wasn't ready for? Do they continue to keep bodies in front of Steph Curry? Because that's how they beat him the last time, was make sure nobody backed off of Steph Curry when they seen the screen. Make him continue to see bodies, make him take tough shots. He only had 1-3 the last time that they played up against San Antonio in San Antonio. And they kept him within range of not having his 30-point average on a night-by-night basis. So this is setting up for a very marquee matchup tonight. But I don't know if it's safe. I know the people out there in the Bay Area are probably coming in with gasoline all over themselves to light that place on fire, because it's just something about that arena that just gets louder and louder. People can't hear themselves think going up against the Warriors. I want to know how you feel about this matchup tonight, while they go at it. I mean, Golden State pushing for 72 or 73. I mean, to eclipse the record, they have to win out. To tie, they can only lose one game. I mean, Nacho, I mean, your thoughts on this scenario, I mean, do you think, how do you feel about the game? I don't even want to persuade you one way or the other. Your thoughts on Golden State hosting the visiting San Antonio Spurs?
I think this is in Golden State, correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay, yeah. I heard you talking about, you know, him never losing in San Antonio. So I don't know. To me, this could be the total, you know, riding the fence speech you could probably ever hear tonight. But to me, this will be a great game. Again, this is all up to Pop. This is a regular season game. They're already, I think, if they're not locked into two already, you know, they're pretty much a good spot to be number two. The problem with that is Pop gets to do whatever he wants tonight. You know, whether it be for the betterment of the game or the fans, it really doesn't matter to him. If it's better for his team to sit those starters because they're not in sync and they're not playing right, I think that'll be something we could possibly see. Now, if they're clicking on all cylinders and it's starting to be a good game, I think we'll see a preview of the Western Conference Finals. However, it's all up to Pop to me. I think the Golden State Warriors are going to come out guns a-blazing, like you said, ready to set the place on fire and do what they have to do. However, I think it's all up to Greg Popovich tonight. If he feels like his team isn't playing right, I have no doubt in my mind he won't second hesitate to pull those starters and put in some backups, get some rest, and get ready for the playoff series he has coming up. You know, I don't know whether or not the basketball purists enjoy that fact or not, but to me, I don't. Whether or not knowing that a man coaching his team, you know, again, to me, I'm not a Spurs fan, so I don't really care either way. But as a fan of the game of basketball, I don't like it. Of course, you know, that's just me personally. But looking at it, it is nothing but beneficial for the team in the long run. It helps them do whatever they have to do, and it solidifies them in the playoff spot doing what they have to do. So to me tonight, the game really hinges on Greg Popovich, what he decides to do with his players. Now, that is evident all year long, but I think it's more evident now being so close to the playoffs.
Now, here's an interesting thing, right? Pop already looked at the scenario on playing these guys. So I don't think it's a situation where he'll rest these guys. I think that now that people are starting to see blood in the water, shark style, that it's time to try and see what they can push up against this Warriors team, especially while they're at home. Like I just stated, they have lost their last two games at home. They lost to the Celtics. They lost to the Wolves. Like I stressed, a team that's 26 games under 500, the Spurs have to take this as a challenge themselves. Let's look at the Spurs situation. Like, does Pop write that on the bulletin board? The last time we were in this building, we lost by 30. The last time we played in the AT&T Center down there in Texas, we beat them badly and held Steph to one made three-point shot. And in the three-point shot that he hit, he was basically in Greg Popovich's lap, throwing up a prayer. It was a jump shot. He threw up a jump shot, but that was a prayer because LaMarcus Aldridge was in his face. It wasn't like he was just jumping at the ball. Like, LaMarcus is 6'11", had both of his hands up, and Steph drilled that shot. He drilled it. So I think that's a job well done, especially with the scheme that they threw at Golden State. And itself, like I said, while Tim Duncan was in his senior year at Wake Forest, that was the last time Golden State, all of the coaches that they've seen, from Adelman on up, Mark Jackson, nobody could figure out Pop in Texas as a Golden State Warrior coach down there in Texas, in which this game takes place Sunday. But they play tonight in the Oracle, where if they were playing tag, they're safe because the last time they played the Spurs, they beat them badly in this building. But do they take this as an adrenaline rush? Do they look at this as a situation where we can play this team better because we've shown that we can play strong basketball in the middle of the state of Texas? So this is what I am looking at right now. Which coach wants this game? This game is critical. This game is critical because, to be honest, if it all comes down to Sunday, I think both coaches could end up resting their team. I think Steve Kerr could sit up there and rest his boys if he wants to. And you know Pop doesn't have a problem with resting anybody. was resting anybody. Pop was the one that rested Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, and Kawhi. If I'm not mistaken, I think all four of them were resting up against a Cleveland Cavaliers team, and they won that game. They won that game. So I know clearly Pop isn't looking at it like he's stressing the fact of putting guys on that bench. But he's saying that he's playing all of his starters and his players in both games. But this game, to me, I think is way more critical than that game on Sunday, unless they want to be the team that, you know, basically lets them get – and not even to say let. I feel like I'm saying the wording the wrong way. But be the team that's playing up against Golden State where they knock at the door for, like, the 71st or 72nd game, however this has ended up panning out for the remainder of the schedule. But both of these coaches have interesting bulletin board material. It's just which one gets the picture at the end of the day. Is it Golden State or is it San Antonio? Anything else before we move away from this matchup?
Actually, nothing else for me the rest of the night, man. Thanks for letting me come on. I got to go head out and have, you know, birthday celebrations and things of that nature. But, you know, one quick thing, I do think this is a back-and-forth game. And yeah, you're correct. Pop has said already right now he's going to start those players. However, I feel if he anticipates his players not, like I said, if he thinks that they're not playing in sync or they need to sit down, like you said, he has no hesitation to sit those guys. That's why I say it's on Pop. But it could be a good game all in all. I think both these games for the Spurs and the Warriors heading up for tonight and Sunday night, I think they're going to be great games regardless. But Pop could, you know, like you say, have a hand in it and sit those star players, and they could still have a chance to get the Warriors everything they can handle. But, again, thanks for letting me come in tonight, man, and enjoy the rest of the night and the show with the guys.
Definitely, man. Enjoy your birthday, man. Happy 30th. Shout out to the Silva family.
All right. Thank you, brother.
No doubt. Now, the next thing I have to talk about is the – MVP race now in question, right? We have the likes of, and I don't even want to like mention these guys as small talk because these guys have had phenomenal seasons. Kevin Durant, and it's really like I don't want to talk about my guy, but Kevin Durant should probably get comeback player of the year. Probably could give him that award already, but I don't even want to talk that up too much. Kevin Durant, third in the league in scoring right now. His field goal percentage is back where it once was while he was at his MVP caliber two seasons ago, in which Kevin Durant has been doing as much as possible to add to this team. Like I said, I can't stress it anymore that this guy should be comeback player of the year for what he's been able to produce with this team, especially with a new coach and Billy Donovan as well. I don't want to undertalk or undermine the situation that what Kevin Durant has brought back to this Thunder team. Still a threat for 50, 40, 90, just to throw that number out there. You can't look at that lightly. In which right behind him or in front of him, however we look at this, Kawhi Leonard, one of the guys that could be notably one of the most improved players in the league, which a lot of people throw the guy that is the reigning MVP in the situation. Now, Steph got better also, but you can also throw Kawhi in this situation, right? And then you have the notable reigning MVP leading the league in scoring, averaging two steals a game. We have not seen somebody do this, play interesting basketball like this since Kobe, and then Michael Jordan and also Allen Iverson. He's in a comfortable company situation while playing basketball like this. Steph Curry has his team 69-9. Playing great basketball heading toward the postseason. I mean, he basically, you can't give him breathing room. You have to keep a hand in his stomach. That's similar to what I was taught how to play basketball, what my coach taught us. Arms reach, don't let this guy up. You know, basically stay with him as much as you can. Move your feet if you can't stay with him. That's how my coach stressed it. But now, y'all know me. Y'all know I didn't try to undertalk Kevin Durant for some odd reason, you know what I'm saying? And I don't want to look at it like I don't want to give Kawhi Leonard on the season that he's had this season. You know, I mean, there's other names that you could throw out there. You could throw out LeBron, especially the way that these guys have been holding down the Eastern Conference while they lost their head coach at the beginning of the season and still being able to stay afloat atop the Eastern Conference. I really can't even – I'm actually looking at it over LeBron. Like, LeBron ain't even a factor. And no damn well, number 23 is the biggest strongest, fastest guy in the league that you got to pay attention to. I can't believe I'm looking at it like that, like I'm over undermining what LeBron brings to the game. But there's a topic that was thrown out there that I heard the other day. And y'all know me. Y'all know who I am. Y'all know who I love. I love my team. You know what I'm saying? But I'm actually trying to, I'm trying my best to do this without being personal or biased. Meep. Russell Westbrook. This guy just tied Magic Johnson's season in 1988-89 with 17 triple-doubles, right? The year 88-89, when that season began, the likes of Stephen Curry, the likes of Kevin Durant, the likes of Russell Westbrook, and the likes of Blake Griffin were born. They were born that year. And we are in front of history, what, 28 years later, however you want to put that situation, in which Russell has been getting this done and atop the Western Conference, one of the top three teams in the Western Conference with a new coach, with one superstar with him. I mean, I actually claim for somebody to throw another star out there, even though I love Enes Kanter. Enes Kanter isn't even a star. I think he's an awesome and great role player that people don't even consider. They don't consider him. But what Russell's been able to do right now, they saying, can he steal a first-place vote? Can he steal one? Or could he play himself into the MVP role? And I'd love to throw this out there, but I want to see what we have. I do have my co-host, my big brother here, Arkeezy, in the building. Welcome to the cafe. How are you feeling this evening?
I'm feeling good, Thomas, man. I'm so glad I didn't miss the entirety of the show. I apologize to all the listeners for my lateness, but I'm excited to be here on the Crossover Cafe, man.
Well, put your apron on, start cooking. You know what to do. I mean, I can go backwards to a lot of the topics, but we can pick up right here where I'm starting off at while you get here, this MVP race situation. There's a lot of names that are involved in this scenario, but is it really all Steph? Do we really look at the winningest team giving it the award to the best player on that team with Steph? And I'm not taking anything away from what Steph is doing. Steph is shooting the hell out of the ball that we have never seen. Steph could threaten to hit 400 made. I can't even believe I'm saying it like this. 400 made three-point shots on the year. He's averaging 30 points a clip also. But are there other guys that can notably get into the voting, or is it just the one-man race? Is it just about the voters are just going to, you know, considerably give it to Steph? Or with the last couple of games going on, do other guys get into this voting, i.e. a Kawhi Leonard, i.e. Kevin Durant, i.e. a LeBron James, i.e. a Russell Westbrook?
The answer to that question is an emphatic no. It's all about Steph Curry. And in my opinion, here's the reason why. When it comes to the MVP of the league, it's not really who's the most valuable player to each team and then determine, you know, who's maybe the best amongst those guys and maybe who we want to go with based on what they did for that team and that team's record and so forth and so on. Even though I feel like that's what they attempt to sell us on, sometimes they go that route, but most of the time it's about who has the most value to the league. And I know there are going to be people who argue with me because somebody's going to say, well, you know, what about the year Dirk won the league MVP? Well, that year, Dirk won league MVP. He playing like the best player in the league, and everyone was talking about Dirk, and it made perfect sense. And that's just kind of how, you know, the MVP goes. It's about what are you doing within the league and who's getting all the buzz. For so many years, LeBron was getting so much buzz, and he was performing to MVP level, and no one could really rival him. Then all of a sudden, you know, we got to the Kevin Durant situation. And Kevin had an outstanding season. I mean, they waited. I think that the year before Kevin won it, it was like, do you go with Kevin or do you go with LeBron again? They ran with LeBron, and Kevin wins his. You know, if it wasn't for the injury, could you go with Kevin? And that was at the point in time when I realized that OKC had a situation of they actually boast two MVPs on their roster, MVP candidates at least, with their play. So I think it's a matter of time that Russell Westbrook is going to get his. I think his best chance to get his would probably be next season if there's a change to that roster. But right now, Steph Curry is going to continue to make history along with that history-making team that he plays for, the Golden State Warriors. It's just a phenomenal team. He's come along at the right time. His game has exploded at the right time. There's no need to include him in the most improved player category. I understand the logic behind it, but he's all about the MVP. And I'm not saying that's what he's thinking about. I say that's what he's all about to me. My view is he's an MVP candidate. I'm not talking about a most improved player. I say most improved for guys who aren't on an all-star level most times, or they've probably been playing at a consistent level, but it's one, two, three tiers away, obviously, from being an MVP or something like that, that type of candidate. But Steph Curry, man, look, he came on like gangbusters. He put his ankle injuries, for the most part, behind him. It wasn't a major issue. He did an outstanding job last year, and it was a close race. I really thought last year it was a co-MVP season for James Harden and Stephen Curry. That's how I would have voted. I wouldn't have been mad if that had been the decision. However, this season, it's been Stephen Curry, hands down. More than likely, I think that he should be the first unanimous vote. I didn't know he was the first until everybody started talking about it, or could be the first. I would have thought that there were seasons, you know, gone by in this league that someone else would have accomplished that before him, because there have been many great MVPs before Stephen Curry. So, but given the situation and given the landscape of what I've seen, it could happen. It's not going to matter to me if he's not. I mean, because if somebody wants to vote for Russell Westbrook, I'm not mad at you for voting for Russell Westbrook. I just don't think it's Russell Westbrook's year to win it. I'm not mad if you vote for Kevin Durant. I just don't think it's his year to win it again. Same with LeBron James. I think this MVP trophy is about who is kind of basically carrying the league right now. And right now, Steph Curry is carrying the NBA on his back. His play, his jump shooting, his shot-making ability. Everything he's done. I mean, almost everything associated with basketball this season, we talked about it and we attached Steph Curry to it. The fact that he looks like the common man. He looks like, you know, the average ball player. You know, he's not an elite specimen in terms of his physical appearance. He shoots a lot of jump shots. He worked on his ball handling. All the simple things that little kids and any human being could work on. What else do we got that was just a movie? I mean, the Under Armour. We talked about him and his shoe deal and what he's doing with Under Armour and the commercials and the endorsements and all these different accolades that just are looking, they're finding their way to Stephen Curry. And the league is continuing to grow and expand worldwide. And it's because of him right now. It's not because of LeBron. LeBron played his part when it was because of LeBron, when it was the things that LeBron was doing, when it was Kevin Durant and what he was doing. But what is happening over the last 2 years in the landscape of the NBA worldwide is because of what Stephen Curry and the Golden State Warriors are doing. So to me, that's the reason why he will be a two-time MVP, and it makes perfect sense. And even while I'm saying it, you know, it just hit me, Ty. This is exactly why Steve Nash was back-to-back MVP winner. Not because of really how good of a player he was, but he was getting so much conversation for two entire seasons, you had to recognize that along with the numbers he was putting up. And now his MVPs finally made sense to me. Wow. Congratulations, Stephen Curry. That's how I see it. Advance.
Now, you have guys around the pro ranks that have talked about this in the likes of Russell Westbrook's favor also. So that's why I threw this subject out there, and I like the debate. I like the debate. And I don't even want to just, you know, go back and forth. But we have not seen a season like this on both forms, whether we look at what Steph is doing right now or we look at what Russell's doing right now. I mean, not even look at it like one vote, because that we haven't had a season with, just like you said, there hasn't been a unanimous MVP vote since LeBron and Shaq, both of them in which missed it by one vote. I mean, is it literally going to be one writer or a voter that just clearly says, you know what, I'm going to go with Kevin Durant or Kawhi or Russ or LeBron? I mean, or is this clearly just the 69 and, you know, to be continued season? Is it because he's on the most valuable team right now that a lot of these players still get overlooked on what's going on? This is the situation that I drew up and still had this as a recipe here to be cooked. That's why I threw out the name
I think
the guy here.
I think I'm sorry. I apologize. No, I like how you're cooking that. And I'm not saying that only one person is going to vote for Westbrook. I know that was probably the way I said it, but there's nothing wrong, you know, with voting for Westbrook. I wouldn't be surprised if multiple people voted for Russell Westbrook. I think they were just talking about the scenario of, look, the play has been so phenomenal. This dude has actually improved beyond leaps and bounds. And Thomas, you got to think about this. Prior to this season, no one has ever gone over the 300 mark in total made three-pointers. And this is a shot you know he's going to take. No one has ever averaged 5 made threes a game for a season. That's what he's going to conclude at. Timeless. He's at 382 before the game tips off tonight. It's realistic. Tonight's game and in the next three, he goes over 400. This is ridiculous, Ty. And I'm not saying that Westbrook hasn't been equally ridiculous. He currently has 810 assists. Talking about Russell Westbrook, he currently has 611 total rebounds. Wait a second. Let me put that in perspective for you. He is just outside. He's probably outside the top 15. But here are the guys he's next to in terms of rebounds. He has more total rebounds than Mason Plumlee. More total rebounds than Ed Davis, Kevin Durant, Robin Lopez, Brooke Lopez, Kenneth Faried, Tyson Chandler, Al Horford, Nick Vucevic, Gorgui Dieng, LeBron James. You know what I'm saying? Like,
wow.
That's huge. You're talking about a point guard. Russell Westbrook is the... Russell Westbrook is in the top 50 in the NBA in total rebounds. I think it's 50 guys on this page. And, he's the only point guard. Okay? He's the only point guard hanging out with a bunch of power forward and centers for total rebounds. And he's not done. Okay? He's at 6'11", but obviously we know he's not done. There are plenty of reasons to vote for Russell Westbrook. 161 steals. He has 52 double-doubles on the season. I know we talk a lot about triple-doubles, Timeless, but the only person in the NBA with more double-doubles than Russell Westbrook this season is Andre Drummond at 66. He's not playing. He's
right.
For real.
Right.
He's for real.
And to go with some of those double-doubles, he's missed like a triple double like 4 or 5 times with one rebound here.
By one.
Or one.
Yeah.
Right.
He's missed by one. One rebound or one assist. Hey, listen, my thing is, you don't got to sell me. I've been knowing that the Oklahoma City Thunder at one time boasted 3 MVPs because Harden will probably get his at some point. That's why I said he should have been co-MVP last year. He would have had one. Durant would have had one. His only thing left is to get one to Russell. I just don't see this season as a co-MVP type of season. Like, Steph Curry has literally been that ridiculous. He's just been that ridiculous, Ty, and he's going to get it again. Russell's going to get votes. I do believe that there are people that are going to vote for Russell Westbrook, but we got to build his momentum. What he did with the triple-doubles at the end of last season. The fact that he came back this year showed that it wasn't a fluke. Kevin Durant walks out that door, I know you don't want to hear this, and I'm not trying to, you know, it is what it is. If Kevin Durant walks out that door, fret not. Russell Westbrook is here. Russell Westbrook, with Enes Kanter and whatever else they put around those guys, will be so ridiculous next year. Russell is hands down the new league MVP. He's going to get that much conversation. He's going to get that much attention and coverage because no longer will it be that dynamic duo of Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant. He's going to win a league MVP before it's all said and done. This just is not the year for him to win it. That's all I'm really saying. Is he a candidate? Hell yeah. Everybody with a brain, even the Scarecrow, knows on the Wizard of Oz knows that Russell Westbrook is a freaking MVP candidate. Everyone knows that. How many votes he gets? Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4. It's not going to be enough is all I'm really saying. It's not going to be enough votes because they're waiting. It's not his time. It's coming, but it's not this season because Westbrook is going to have a better season. And oftentimes the writers want to know for certain you're getting out of the first round. And that's going to be the task for OKC and management and Russell Westbrook going forward if they should have to go forward without Kevin Durant. Now, let's say Kevin Durant stays next year. Russell still gets MVP, period. I just think his chances are better without him, but if Kevin stays, he still gets it. He still gets it. The thing about Kevin staying is, you know, it's a possibility votes get split because they play on that same team and people are going to be like, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? But it's the writing's on the wall. Russell Westbrook is an MVP candidate, period, every season, period. And as long as he's going to be this guy, triple-doubles regularly, a la Jason Kidd, Magic Johnson, people like that, yeah, no doubt about it. He is who he is. He's a great, great player. It's just Steph Curry is – Steph Curry right now is the sun and Russell's the moon.
Now, there's a lot of different scenarios that I want to, like, draw up out of the situation. One is, how does Russell play better than that? You know what I'm saying? In fact, I don't know how it gets better if Kevin Durant is displaced from the Thunder team. I think that with him doing it while Kevin Durant is there and him not feeding Durant like that, a lot of his assists don't go to Durant. Durant gets the ball, I want to say, like, anywhere from 27 to 40% of the time from Russ. Like, Russ makes those assists happen with Steven Adams and his Canner, Serge Ibaka, Andre Roberson for alley-oop here and there, Steve Adams for alley-oop here and there. I mean, Russ is making sure that the defense knows that he's not going to 35. Like, either we got to stop him or play defense elsewhere because that's what ends up happening because a lot of people try to concentrate on him closing the door on him, and then he ends up finding the wide-open guy playing smarter basketball. Now it's like, if we paint the picture that is outside of the 2015-2016 season and 2016-2017 and beyond, how does he end up playing better than this? Does he also fall into the most improved player situation as they're trying to throw Steph Curry into this situation? Or if Kevin Durant stays on the team outside of this season right here, how does he continue to produce and play better? I mean, because he actually took a decline on his scoring total to make sure everybody stays involved also. So that's one thing. And then also, the rest of the league is going to get better too. So that's what I throw in there too.
Oh, man. Russell took a hit. We took a hit in his average.
And it's his scoring total, yeah. Per game, he's averaging 21
man.
A game.
For the season, Russell's averaging 23.6 right now.
Okay, so this must be the last couple of games while he was on this tear.
Yeah, that might be what he was doing maybe over the last, like, three or four. But, I mean, like, yo, this dude's average is 24 points, basically, rounding up 10 assists, 8 rebounds, 2 steals, okay? And he is shooting 46% on par with what he pretty much been doing for his career. And 81% from the line. I'm telling you, Russell Westbrook is not the issue. The issue is just what you said. Steph Curry had such a phenomenal year last season, no one thought he could do any better than what he did really last year. Even myself, I looked at it like, man, because I got the guy in fantasy. You know me, with fantasy players, you want to catch a guy in a career year, in a peak year, and you say, okay, he can't possibly be any better than this because it's so ridiculous. And I just, I just went over it. It's better. Who comes back that much better? I mean, and that's the issue. I mean, it's so ridiculous that people are wanting to include Curry in most improved. How do you put an MVP candidate, the most recent MVP candidate, get included in most improved player conversation? That's what I'm saying. Like, the issue is just how enamored everyone is with Stephen Curry and what he's doing. When LeBron James was rolling out MVP trophy after MVP trophy, no one was talking about putting LeBron in most improved. They just, you know, he's just the league MVP. But that's what I'm saying. There's a love affair going on right now with Steph Curry, and it's like, you know how it is when a person is in love. Ty, you want to get them cards, flowers, gifts, take them out, hang out with them. Just anytime you just want to say their name. You just scroll through, bring their face up on your phone, bring up a picture. Like, it doesn't matter right now. He's it. And yeah, I mean, Russell Westbrook is getting some attention. He's getting looks. But it's just, you know, it's just Steph Curry, man. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, I don't think either guy should suffer. I mean, we just going back and forth. Obviously, you know, right now, hands down, Russell Westbrook, like I said, is the best point guard in the league, period. And that's, you know, as a point guard, he's the best point guard, okay? Steph Curry is the best player right now. He's not the best point guard in terms of what point guards are supposed to do, what they rely on to do, because that team is not set up for their point guard to do all that by himself. That team has playmakers. Draymond Green is, I believe, leading that team in total assists. Is Draymond viewed as a point forward? A lot of people don't call Draymond Green no point forward. They don't think about Draymond Green in the terms of a point forward, but he has the most total assists on the team. They share the ball. That team is full of playmakers. Steph Curry's a playmaker. He's a great shot maker. He's clutch. I mean, he can obviously assist the ball. He's getting steals. He might not be an individual lockdown defender, but obviously he's doing something on the defensive end. His basketball IQ in terms of the defensive end is probably greatly improved since he came into the league. He's fixed his body. I mean, he's just put in the work, man, and he's going to get rewarded for the work that he's put in up until this point. But so will Russell Westbrook, is really all I'm saying. So will Russell Westbrook. It's coming. It's just not this year. I know it sounds like a broken record, but that's what it is.
Okay, well, we got to sit on that one, and we have seen players didn't get past the first round and get an MVP, i.e. Dirk, the guy that you hit on when he won his.
Mm-hmm.
But I do want to talk about a situation that we kind of touched on the start of the show, and I was talking about Chicago being in Miami. They are up on the Miami Heat as of this current point in time, and I also was talking about the Houston Rockets trying to play their way in to a playoff position or a playoff spot. While they sit at the ninth seed, they are two games under 500, and the Phoenix Suns have fought their way back into this game. At one point, they were down by double digits. They are at a half, down by three to this Houston Rocket team in Texas. And also, the Heat are down by six to this Bulls team. Your thoughts on both of these situations? One, with Houston, how it is constructed, if they do end up losing this game, could this be the final, scene of seeing this team, how this is constructed with Dwight Howard and Harden and players of that nature? And also for the Chicago Bulls, if the Chicago Bulls don't hang on and win this game, they basically lose and finish the season outside of the playoffs instead of, you know, being in it. You know, the final look of looking at the Chicago Bulls team with guys like Derrick Rose, Jimmy Butler, McDermott, I mean, the list goes on, especially while they have injured players like Taj and also Joakim Noah also out for this team as well.
Well, I'll start with Chicago. I think it's not for the Chicago Bulls to lay down. I'm not suggesting this team should lay down, but it doesn't hurt the Chicago Bulls, in my opinion, to not be in the postseason this year because changes are going to come to that roster. And it just might be good to, you know, go on and start vacation, go fishing, you know, as they say on TNT, be going fishing early, simply because if this team were to make the playoffs with this current construction of the roster, you know, with Tibbs on personnel, then management will have to deal with some questions. One, why did you fire Thibodeau when you still got into the playoffs with almost the identical roster that he had? But what you would also have is they're still not going to win the championship. It's just like, are you really content with being a perennial, you know, playoff contender and making appearances and getting bounced out and not ever getting really to the Eastern Conference Finals or getting to the NBA Finals? So they obviously have an idea, and we want to say that the Chicago Bulls, for the most part, as an organization, know exactly what they need in order to get to an NBA Finals. You got to have the talent, the player personnel, the coaching staff, and a little bit of luck. And right now, I think they're short on the luck by a ton. When you see all the injuries that have ravaged them and derailed them, when they have had some talent and some coaching, obviously, that I think that could get the job done. You know, Tibbs was on that championship team. You know, he was making those runs with Doc Rivers and the boys in Boston. You had, you know, a league MVP at one point in time in Derrick Rose before the injuries. You have one of the better passing big men in the league in Joakim Noah. And things like that. So they had Luol Deng at the time who was playing at a high level within those systems. So it's just been the luck side that really hasn't worked well for Chicago in terms of getting back to the promised land, i.e. Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen years. So it's time to go into the draft with a new game plan, going to the offseason, making moves. Pau Gasol, he wasn't moved. I don't know if he's going to be a part of some kind of sign and trade. There was no market for Joakim Noah. No one was buying on Taj Gibson. All guys that should be seen as assets on other teams to maybe get you the personnel that best fits what it is that Fred Hoiberg and his coaching staff want to get done. So that's how I see the Bulls. I think it's best that they miss the postseason. When it comes to the Houston Rockets, it's pretty much the same thing. Like, why go back and why give the illusion that what we have is good enough to get to the playoffs and quote-unquote get lucky? They got lucky last year. They were a pretty decent team. They picked up Josh Smith after all the negativity that he was receiving in Detroit, and he helped them in terms of getting lucky and getting past the Clippers and making that deep run. Is it real? No, that was luck. That was fool's gold last season. And they came back with, for the most part, the exact same roster minus Josh before he found his way back to Houston. And it's just time to move on. You know, it's time to move on. I wouldn't be surprised if Dwight Howard opts out and goes somewhere else. Management, you got to make the right moves. You got to find the right mix that fits around James Harden. Build around James Harden, a la, you know, Philadelphia back in the day, building around Allen Iverson. Because it just appears to me, because Allen Iverson never had a big man the caliber of Dwight Howard, okay? He never had that. And James Harden has had Howard now for what, two seasons?
Right.
Yeah. So, and what did he do? Nothing. He didn't make his is his mantra, like, yo, I got a big man, and I'm going to feed my big man. I don't got to do all the heavy lifting. I'm going to feed my big man, and we together are going to get it done. That's not Harden's approach. Harden wants to be the man. Well, if you want to be the man, then be the man. Tell management, just go get some role players, and let's see what you do. Let's see if you can turn those role players into relevant household names or guys that can help you get wins, as well as, obviously, most important, you got to get stops, timely stops on the defensive end. Score enough points to secure the win. The team with the most points is the way you win basketball games. I don't care what anybody says about defenses winning championships. It's a whole game. So you can't have one without the other. And let's see what happens from there. Because they've been trying to fool us. They've been trying to trick, you know, the Rocket fan. I'm not a Rocket fan, but that's what I see. I see it like you've been trying to trick the fan by saying, well, you're going to build a team and you keep trying to reconnect to those Hakeem Olajuwon, those glory days and all of that where they had bigs and they played inside out. Man, y'all ain't playing inside out. Y'all playing outside, outside. All the time outside. All day, right. Every day outside. You mean we got a big man? Where? Who? When? He gone? He left? Yep. That's what's about to happen. That's the deal. So, you know, I'm not, man. I don't feel sorry for the players on the Houston Rockets. I think they all need to step correctly to James Harden and address that situation because he's the one with the keys to the kingdom. He's the one that's handling the ball the most. I mean, look, I know Ty Lawson was somewhat, you know, got in his own head. You know, he picked up those DUIs and all that kind of stuff. And but he looked like a completely washed player. I mean, he looked washed in Houston. And did James Harden go out of his way to defer and say, hey, Ty, you just came off a season of, you know, averaging basically a double-double, 17-10, come down here, quarterback this thing, and let me, you know, spot up, catch and shoot, kill these boys. I get my 1-2 step on when I need to close out games, and you can run pick and rolls with Dwight, and, like, we'll really be a problem. Let's be a team. Hell no, nah, he didn't say that. That's why we ain't see it. And that's why they right where they are now. And that's why you asked me that question. So, yes, they should break it up. Poof, be gone. Start all over again.
And this is actually Dwight's third season with the Rockets, not his second. So they've been together for 3 years.
And he still ain't figured it out. What the heck? Right. Come on, man. Come on, man. 3 years? You had Dwight Howard for... Yeah, it's time to go, Dwight. I'm mad at you, bruh. ETO, early termination option.
Now, it's funny because we already look at the situation with Derek going somewhere, the roles and potential with the Chicago Bulls team, and looking at Dwight Howard, D. Howard, looking like he's on the travel situation. Do these guys kind of flip-flop the Derek Rose head to a Houston? Does Dwight go to Chicago with Powell, like especially with Joe Kim potentially on the move? I mean, these scenarios could play out with, you know, if these teams are looking at it that way or, you know, seeing suitors for guys of this nature in the NBA.
Well, I would think, you know, well, Powell's not going to be in Chicago. I don't think Noah's going to be in Chicago. Powell's going to go and get paid. It's time for Powell to go and get paid, and because he's due, all right? And he's had two phenomenal seasons in Chicago. I think he still wants to win, so he's going to be looking for the right situation for him. Derrick Rose, I mean, is Derrick a free agent? I want to say Derrick is, what, still under contract, and he would have to get traded out of Chicago, and I'm not quite sure there's a market. And that's just due to his health. I mean, obviously, if he was still playing at that MVP level, everyone would want him. I mean, but so is Chicago. So, you know, that's the issue with Derek, and I'm doing the research really quickly here. So, yeah, Derek has to be in the last year of his deal. So he may not move this summer, but he'd be a trade candidate, obviously, next season when we're up and running that 2016-17 campaign, they might do something at the trade deadline because he'll have an expiring contract because he's unrestricted free agent 2017-18. But Dwight Howard, he's opting out. Dwight is definitely going to be looking to probably be not so much the centerpiece. I'm not sure if Dwight Howard sees himself as a centerpiece player anymore like he was did when he was in Orlando. But Dwight Howard, I don't believe, is also not ready to sell himself short as a player who can't help a team win. He knows that he can help a team win and get a team over the hump. Here's a crazy scenario. Let's paint this picture here, Timeless, and tells me a little hypothetically. Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant resigns in Oklahoma City, and they create a sign-and-trade situation. They move Ibaka, Andre Roberson, anything else to make the money match, and bring in Dwight Howard to play alongside, you know, Enes Kanter. Put Kanter at the four. But that's probably going to cause too much confusion. But anyway, what brought that up was there was a time where that's the destination when Howard was an original free agent before he got shipped out of Orlando to L.A. I just thought it was the perfect fit for him to be in OKC and spell Ibaka. This was back when they had Harden, and I didn't want them to re-sign Ibaka before Harden. And I thought, you know, Presti, they made the wrong decision. They should have moved Ibaka for Harden. I mean, moved Ibaka for Dwight Howard. And I just to think about what that team would have been with Westbrook, Harden, Durant, Dwight Howard. I mean, you're talking dynasty. You're talking dynasty. Because Dwight Howard doesn't really, to me, disappear the way Ibaka did here recently, man, in terms of defending the painted area. So I don't know where Dwight Howard could go is what I'm trying to figure out right now, Timeless. But he's going to look for a best-case scenario. He still wants to be, you know, a player. He still wants to be recognized as one of the better centers to ever play the game in the league. But he has to find the right situation. And right now, everyone's playing outside with the three ball, and his game might not match. So we got to find those teams that are willing to use the Dwight Howard. Does he make way to Utah? I don't know. They're still playing with bigs. Does he want to come to Indiana? Frank Vogel is more comfortable, you know, with the traditional, you know, big lineup, you know, the four and the five out on the court as opposed to trying to play that small ball, Paul George at the four. He's got to find the right fit. And that's going to be Dwight Howard's job if he's going to opt out and leave. He's got to find the right fit because this might be his last real good chance of being on a quality team that has the opportunity of really winning, unless he gets lucky late in his career the way that Bill Walton did with that Celtic team in the 80s.
Right. Okay. Well, both of these teams are going in opposite directions. Houston was actually letting Phoenix catch up. Houston is now ballooning that lead into 10. And Chicago, they were up 6 at the half. We have a tie score in Miami. So this is anybody's game down there in South Beach. Your thoughts on this matchup? We are going to shut it down right here, right now. The matchup with the Warriors and the Spurs tonight. Your thoughts on how this plays out, especially in the last four games? It goes Spurs-Grizzlies. I didn't get you at the start of the show, so I need you to break that down before we close out. And also, I need a plug closeout promo before we get out of here also.
So run that again. They play Spurs-Grizzlies to close out the season?
Yep, their last four games.
Oh.
San Antonio-Memphis.
Oh, wow. See, this is what I'm saying, Todd. This is why you can't not talk about this guy for league MVP, because in order to set the record, they have to go 4-0. And they're going to be on television at least two out of the next four games. I know NBA TV makes it 3 out of 4. But I would be surprised, you know, they're on the fourth night, the final night of the season. This matchup, I mean, I just said it, basically. We know what's at stake. The record. That's what's at stake. If San Antonio wins this game, there's no reason to watch or be concerned with the next three. It's literally one game at a time in pursuit of history, of setting a new record. That's what it's about right now. So it's must-see TV. Is Pop going to play his guys? Is he resting anybody? I don't know. It's not an issue for me.
No. Pop said he's playing them in both games. He's playing everybody, he said.
Great. That's perfect. Because you listen, Steve Kerr and that Warrior team doesn't want any excuses. They don't want the history books to be written. Well, if Pop had to play so-and-so, if Pop had to play, well, why did Pop sit so-and-so? Pop was looking out for Kerr. Pop was trying to help. Nah, nobody want to hear that. Thank you, Greg Popovich. I love that. I'm so glad that he's going to play to win because this is what you do. Popovich is a historian of the game, man. He is going to make you love the game, protect the game, respect the game of basketball. It's the perfect game. And Popovich realized what is at stake. This is not the point in time. If it was just any old kind of, you know, history on the line, it'd be no big deal. But because it's history on the line, you have to earn it. You have to earn your place in history. Pop understands that. And that's, you can best believe, Pop is going to be animated probably in both games, and he's going to coach to win. He's not going to allow it to be easy. But at the same time, and that's great for basketball. It's going to be great for us as viewers. And, you know, iron sharpeneth iron. So don't be surprised if the Golden State Warriors seem to just get better as they head into the postseason because they've been catching everyone A1 game. Remember that. No matter what happens, even if they don't tie the record, if they don't set the record, they probably will still win the championship because iron sharpened iron, and everyone has brought their A game to the Golden State Warriors nightly. So that's my thoughts on that, man. I'm so glad again that I had the opportunity to jump on with you. Again, my apologies for the lateness. Sports City Chef, Master Chef Edition, you know everything that's going on here, folks. Come on back. Keep supporting the program and everything that we got going on. And till the next time, my brother, I'm out.
And the one thing I did want to touch on about this Warrior team, as it is constructed, at least the first six guys, or seven, we can look at it like that, first six or seven have had to be the man somewhere or sometime in their life. Steph Curry and Davidson, now with Golden State. Klay Thompson out there at Washington State, able to, you know, veer the ball somewhere else and you know, take a breather. Harrison Barnes, while he was in North Carolina, ran the show while he was down there. Draymond Green in Michigan State, the guy. We remember Bogut coming out of that draft, had to be the guy in Milwaukee with nobody around him. Iguodala, while Allen Iverson left. I mean, this is six people that I'm throwing out there right now, had to shoulder the load one way or another of being the guy, and they are putting it together as a team with at least six or seven guys that know what it takes to get the job done. This is what makes it scary on what Steve Kerr has right now and probably has been whispering in that locker room that a lot of people are not paying attention to. I did want to get that one out there. Great stuff. I you know, started off slow, got better as it progressed. Shout out and happy birthday. Shout out to Nacho Ignacio Silva. Enjoy your 30th birthday, landmark birthday. He came and spent it here in Sports City. I'm happy for that. SportsCityChef.com. Check out the website, the interviews, the blogs, the chefs. We'll be back here with the roundtable tomorrow. Y'all stay tuned, man. Got a lot of stuff coming on. Like I said, there's a week left of regular season basketball, people. Enjoy it. There's four games left before y'all get back into this crossover cafe. It should be electric to see if Golden State gets to 73, 72, 71. They win tonight, they just get to 70. But we'll see. How do you feel about it, Royce? What number do they get? What number do they get?
Man, I think they set the record.
So he said they win out. They are going to win out. Stay tuned, Sports City. We'll be right back here Thursday. You already know what time it is. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.
Motherfuckers.